Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Level Up Human, the comedy science podcast, souping up the Homo sapien. And welcome to Level Up Human, the show that looks at the human race and tries to figure out how we can make it better. We're taking suggestions from our panel, from our audience here at the Latitude Festival, and from the natural world to try and work out exactly what the next stage in human evolution should be. We're putting together a to-do list for human evolution, and we'll use anything we can, from microsurgery to a smouldering iron, or even fuzzy felt, if it's appropriate. I'm your host, Simon Watt, and today I'm joined by three primates who just happen to be people. Judging the ideas to see if they are worth incorporating into future editions of the species, we have elf lions!
Elf. Hello.
She is a regular performer and MC. You'll see her all around this comedy circuit. You'll see her here at Latitude performing her shows. You've also just graduated from clown school.
Yes, I have.
Why is your makeup not more?
I'm saving it. For tomorrow. Well, my clan was technically a nun, because my teacher was like, "Boy, you are like a virgin." So that is what he sounds like, Yoda. So that was it.
Why did you go to clown school, actually? Can you tell us more about it? What's clown school like?
Well, it wasn't technically... So it's a school called L'École Philippe Goliat, which is taught like by this old man called Philippe, who looks... Imagine a toadstool covered in moss, but in a Panama hat. And that was Philippe. And so we learn all sorts of things. And occasionally he'd be like, "But before I watched this woman perform, I was a classic heterosexual male. Now I am not so sure." And then he would send you off and pour ice cold water over your head and then make you sing. And you go, "But now you are beautiful." So it was enigmatic teaching.
So the reason Elf is here, she's going to represent humanity. You are going to choose which of the ideas goes forward. What kind of thing would you like to hear from our panelists?
Oh, something empowering and different. Something to do with gender, maybe. Something interesting. I don't know, I'm just picking science-y interesting words.
I think you two can manage this. So, we're also joined on my immediate right, we have got Joe Latimer. Joe is a microbiologist. He's working on human-microbe interactions and antimicrobial adaptation. And you've just started at Salford University as a lecturer. You love skin. What's so good about skin?
Well, what isn't so good about skin? I mean, it's all around us, literally. It's stopping us from rotting, which, you know, is
That's a good place to start.
Especially if you're at a festival, you don't want to be rotting. Yeah, it's great. It stops us getting infected. And it's massive, and it's very complicated. But I'm not going to go into all the detail about that.
Well, you can know. He knows all the stuff about this. He's got a good place to pitch from. And we're also joined by Stephen Colgan. Woo! Stephen Colgan, he's an author, an artist, a songwriter, a speaker. He's from Cornwall, and he's one of the elves from QI. Ooh. Yes, he is quite big for an elf. Actually, we've got two elves on the panel. I've just noticed that.
I'm more of a sort of troll, really. I don't know.
But like, I always think of elves like, you know, being pixie sized and small.
Well, in Cornwall we have Cornish piskies, but I'm too big for that as well now.
So. What's a piskie?
It's a pixie spelt wrong from Cornwall. They're mischievous little sprites that they lead people into swamps and sink boats and.
And we're also taking those suggestions from our wonderful audience here at the Latitude Festival. Please give her a warm welcome.
Yay!
All right. So before we leap into the hypothetical and decide what we'd incorporate into the human genome, we're going to start with the news stories of what's actually happening today. So the panel, each one of them have brought along a news story, something in science that's caught their eye. Why don't we start with you, Stephen? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, the story that caught my eye this week was the fact that people in America, surprisingly, are now going to plastic surgeons to have G-spot augmentation.
G-spot augmentation?
Yeah,
what does that actually mean?
Well, what it means... Get ready to cross your legs, everyone. This means having a collagen injection into the G-spot.
Oh.
I think basically so people find it's easier to find. I think that's the idea. Although what's really interesting about it is the fact that no one's actually yet proven that it exists. So,
is that true? Because there might be some people here who want to argue that.
Well, the thing is that there are studies where people say, yes, we've definitely found it. There are studies that say, nope, there's no evidence for it. But there's a lot of people out there saying, hell yes, it exists. But the fact is that there is still no definite, 100% non-arguable fact that it exists. But people are still charging hundreds of dollars to have collagen injections put into it, if it exists.
So you're just like playing darts with your... vagina, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
With collagen darts.
That's it, yeah. That's
if they exactly don't know where it exists, how do they know where to put it?
Well, they kind of know where it's supposed to be and where people claim it is, but there's no actual... Even when you scan the area with sort of CAT scans and things like this, there's nothing physical there. There's no physical object. There's no target painted there. There's no raised area. There's no particular bunch of nerves or anything, and yet people still claim that that's where it is, and some people... very much claim that's where it is. But, yeah, it's certainly enough that people are actually trying to augment it.
It's sounding more and more like Atlantis rather than anatomy here. Like, are we going to get sex guides one of these days and they've got these markers saying, here there be dragons or something? Yeah.
I was going to do a little gag there suddenly, and I suddenly thought, it's probably age-related because no one will get the joke if I say, yeah, you start looking close enough, you'll find Doug McClure. But no one will get that, will they? Unless they're over a certain age.
What does the G stand for? I should know this because I read
Graffenberg,
Cosmopolitan once.
The man it's named after.
What is it?
A man called Graffenberg. It was named after.
Why is it named after a man? Yeah.
Well, because
I want to rename it.
Because all scientists are men, obviously, you know.
Oh, come on, should be
well,
sisters.
Well, it was the case, of course, at the time. Yeah.
Sisters doing it for themselves in a very different way.
I read a really bizarre article. Again, it was like on online, like 7 things you shouldn't put on your vagina, which obviously I clicked on. And it said...
Piers Morgan.
And it said to... But it said at the top, don't worry, girls, it's impossible to lose anything in your vagina. Which I thought, just because it means it's impossible to lose doesn't mean it's easy to retrieve afterwards. Just thought it was such a silly article to do.
Well, if they've lost the G-spot itself, surely you can lose anything there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, the whole area of research into human sexuality is fraught with difficulty anyway, because there've been a number of books where people have actually talked about the research into human sexuality, and the biggest problem is trying to get a research grant and explaining what you want to do with that money. Because in certain cases, it just sounds like, I've just got this great idea. We can have some real fun, lads. Just give us some money so we can fund it. It's difficult. I find it quite extraordinary that such a fundamentally important part of the human condition, the thing that actually makes the species continue, is still probably one of the least researched areas of human anatomy.
I have a bit of a confession here, because you see, I'm an evolutionary biologist by training, and during my master's, I was doing studies into zebra finch sperm, and I had to do some things which mean that I haven't been able to look a bird directly in the eye ever since. Joe, what is your news story? What have you brought along for us?
Well, I'm going to bring it to a slightly different area.
You're going to lower the tone from that. Crikey.
I'm going to lower the tone but increase the altitude. So my news story is, well, I'm a microbiologist and I'm a double geek because I also like flight in space because it's exciting, right? So my news story is microbiologist in space. I mean, that's good, isn't it? So Dr. Kate Rubin has just been blasted off on a Soyuz rocket into space to do experiments on the International Space Station.
Ooh.
Because no one's figured out yet what happens to us and what happens to our microbes and what happens on a genetic level when people travel in space, which is a bit absurd because we've been going there for about 50 years, right? Ooh. So she's going to be doing the first experiments, actually growing cells and looking at cell-microbe interactions in space. And part of doing that is that she's going to be sequencing genomes. So she's going to take a DNA sequencer up there and sequence the hell out of everything she finds in the hope of then developing something where they can go to Mars and find new life, maybe.
That's really cool. So I guess it is amazing that things we understand so, so well here, because microbiology is... I know that there's so many microbes that will never be done, but it's something that we do quite well on Earth at the moment, and this is the first time there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. So they don't even know how it's going to work, because at the moment on Earth, if you want to grow some cells, you have a dish, and you put some liquid on it, and it sits at the bottom of the dish. But in space, that's not going to work, is it? Because there's no gravity. So they don't even know whether that's going to work. So they're working from scratch. So what they've done so far is they've taken samples from the space station and sent them back down to Earth. But in future, when they're going to want to go and explore, that's not going to be feasible. So she's doing some pretty groundbreaking stuff.
I was just thinking you could have these little disease-ridden planets just floating around inside the space station, couldn't you?
Yeah, we could be spreading...
little globules of liquid covering things growing, just floating around.
Well, that's the thing. They don't know what's up there. So every astronaut and cosmonaut that's gone up onto the space station has taken up their own set of bacteria. And it's a closed system, so one knows where those bacteria have gone, how many are surviving, and what's going on.
There's a mate of mine who lives in Bristol, and I think he's got the best job title I've ever heard, because he's called an Officer for Planetary Safety, which... You know, that's going straight in a Tinder profile, isn't it? Like, it's really incredible.
He's manning the giant laser.
Ah, well, it's even weirder, though, because the planet is not Earth. His whole purpose is to try and protect other planets. So he's the guy who's responsible for sterilizing spacecraft and the bits that we put in them to make sure that we don't infect other places. Because it'd be nothing worse than going to Mars looking for life and discovering we'd taken it there.
Yeah, but War of the Worlds, our cold killed them, didn't it?
If you've seen War of the Worlds, spoiler alert, you know, that's what wipes them out. If you've seen the film, if you haven't seen the film, don't, right? But, you know.
If you have seen the film, it's spoiled anyway, isn't it? Let's be honest, if you've seen it.
Sounds like the start of a really interesting horror film, just going with some moss floating in a space station and suddenly zombies!
They're
I don't know how science works.
But the word microbiologist and interesting has been in the same place until Joe came along with
some
news. Cool.
Mission accomplished.
What about you, Elf? What news stories caught your eye lately?
Well, I got very excited by doing some research on science because that is not my area of expertise. So in research to this, I typed in science news and I discovered lots of cool stuff. And this really brought out my inner Philip K. Dick. So I'm not sure if you've read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But this news story got me really excited about it. So, and I've got some notes because it took me ages to pronounce all the big words, such as myocyte. So basically, in Illinois, at the University of Illinois, they've been doing soft robotics. And what they did was they've made this golden skeleton of a skate, the fish, but 1/10 of the size. So it's really tiny. And then what they did is they got 20,000 rat heart cells, which are called cardiomyocytes. Well, I thought that was quite a thing. Thanks, guys. And then they put them, and basically what they did, they sort of bioengineered them to react to light. So what happened is they then put them on top of the golden skeleton. And so when the light shines on them, the cells contract and relax, causing the skate to move and be directed by light. So it's not quite an organism and it's not quite a robot, but it's sort of split between the two. And it's really incredible because it means, one, if we can do that type of thing with cells, we could potentially make, what's the correct word for it? Oh, yes, artificial hearts, which would be good for heart transplants. But it also means we can make artificial creatures. So that's something to look forward to.
A question here, then. Okay, you say they respond to light, then.
Yeah.
If I had a heart that only beated when it was, like, in the presence of light...
You'd have to go to a lot of discos.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of a weird, but although actually those skates could be really useful. They'd answer that question of what happens to the fridge light whenever you close the door.
Yeah.
You could just leave it in and see if it wanders around.
Does that mean everyone in Norway would be dead for 6 months of the year?
There's a downside. Why even Norway? Jeez, have you been to Scotland lately?
That's
man.
True, yeah.
It's awful sometimes. It's a lovely, lovely place when you can see it. Right, so that's news stories. That's the kind of stuff which is happening right this very minute. But now we're going to take a leap into the unknown. Audience, we can just about see you. If at any point you have any questions or suggestions and things, stick your hand down there and Rachel's going to race to you with the microphone. But at this point, you can make your pitches. For those who've just joined us, we're trying to put together a design spec for human evolution. We're trying to figure out what you would like on the to-do list as such. What do you want to see in the next stage, human 2.0? You've got another cool fact. Yes, of course you can say it.
I'm not sure, but give me a chair. You know people with wheelie suitcases who do not know how to wheel those wheelie suitcases? You know, I feel like everyone should have a license to use a wheelie suitcase. Because there's always that one person who moves as if they're drunk. Anyway, Olive Robotics have come up with a suitcase that you can ride like a Segway. And I know that sounds more dangerous, but you can control it with your phone. So imagine Herbie as a suitcase. And it means it's a completely efficient suitcase and it can tell exactly where its owner is. So if you don't have any friends, your suitcase is your new friend. And it's just so much more practical because it means that then you can just go zoop and it just turns up at King's Cross St. Pancras. And if it gets lost, it finds you. Well, I thought that was very exciting, so...
It's fair enough, but like I've never watched anybody in a Segway and thought, yeah, they're cool.
Really?
You're not going to see James Dean on a Segway, are you? What point does that happen? Just somebody hitting a curb over and over again with a bit of optimism slowly dying in their eyes.
I saw in Paris, all the ticket inspectors on the trains have Segways, and they go along the platform on their Segways, and they pause you and check you for your tickets.
They're good fun. So your suitcase is smart enough to be able to find its way home.
Yes.
So when we've got driverless cars, your suitcase will load itself into a driverless car and bring itself home.
Oh, well, it doesn't have
arms. You don't
even
have to go on holiday, do you? You just send your suitcase on holiday.
Yeah.
Actually, if you ever have your suitcase mislaid by certain airlines who will remain nameless here, they've had longer holidays than I've had already.
Some of them have iPod speakers, so you could use them for parties.
Look, the guy in the Segway's here. Put your hands in the air. Well, they can, because they're not touching anything. Good point. Ooh. Why don't we start with you this time, Joe? What do you reckon? How would you change the human species?
Okay, so initially this is going to sound a bit boring. Smart bacteria, right?
Does that sound boring?
Yeah. Okay. You might have to bear with me on this one. Okay, so we've all got bacteria, right? We're all living with bacteria. We've got loads of them in our bodies, yeah, and on our bodies. I've done a bit of maths, actually, and figured out how many bacteria all of us in the festival are carrying. It's a few. It's 1.4 quintillion, and that's a one with 18 zeros.
What about the end of the festival?
At the end of the... Well, well, that's it. It might be that if you get particularly dirty, it might go up. But then there's also the alcohol thing. Ethanol kills bacteria, so it might kind of
depends on how many people you kiss as well and how much bacteria you pass on through that.
We should point
out,
actually...
kissing is very dirty indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. Joe was also doing a talk here called Science of Snogging, is that right?
Science of Snogging, tomorrow at the... Am I allowed to plug that?
Yeah, but you're kind of basically saying, come get infected. That was what you were arguing there.
Oh, I'm just going to say it's fine. Snogging's good. See, I've already said it. It's fine. You don't need to come tomorrow.
Just in case any of you were worried...
It's like I said earlier, you apply for a grant, I've got this idea.
So yeah. Tell us more, why smart bacteria? What does smart bacteria actually mean?
Okay, so I'm being a little bit selfish here, possibly. So we've got all these bacteria, and they're brilliant, actually. They're really good for us. In fact, we couldn't live without them, so they do lots of stuff for us. Well, we've evolved with them for a start. We've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years. We wouldn't be who we are if it wasn't for them. And they wouldn't be who they are if it wasn't for us. So they digest our food, they make our vitamins for us, they fine-tune our immune system, they tell our body what's bad and what's good, so they know what to react to. And they're pretty amazing, but they're still bacteria. So our body isn't great at telling the difference between our friendly bacteria, which aren't friendly, I'll get to that in a minute, and potentially harmful bacteria. So And then every time we take antibiotics, we're not just killing the bacteria that are infecting us, we're killing also the ones that are keeping us alive, which is a bit crap, isn't it, really?
Oh, sorry, I just thought, like, you were going to jump in there with something, because I've got questions here, among other things, is that basically, does yogurt ever do actually anything?
Not for thrush.
No.
Again, another thing I read on Cosmopolitan. Stop putting thrush on your bits. It does nothing. I learned this from a gynecologist I also met on the bus.
It doesn't matter what flavour it is.
Oh, never use a Müller Fruit Corner. Make it even worse.
Well, not the ones with the cornflakes, anyway, actually. You don't crunch.
What have you been reading, Simon?
No, I don't know, because that is a funny thing, isn't it? Like, when do people start thinking that, you know, yogurt was the answer?
When they wanted to sell a lot of yogurt.
Yeah.
I think that's actually the answer.
So it is mostly marketing. Yogurt does do nothing, then. As an official microbiology slant, what stage is yogurt ever useful?
If there's anyone here from Yakult listening, I'm not going to say that outright, but the fact is that the bacteria in us and on us are so complex. So they interact with each other and they interact with us, and there's hundreds and hundreds of different species. So all I'm saying is it seems a bit unlikely that if you take a few spoonfuls of one particular species, it might not necessarily be anything.
Have you got a favourite bacteria?
I've already admitted I'm a massive geek.
Is it Barry?
Barry the bacterium.
Yeah.
No,
my favourite.
Is he?
Mine's got a name. It's called Conan the Bacterium. That's a real thing. Officially the hardest bacteria in the entire world. What's yours, then? You said you do have one.
Okay, yeah, I do. It's called Proteus vulgaris, and it's... Yeah, right. It's because it smells vulgar, which isn't a great reason to have a favourite bacterium. In fact, what is a good reason to have a favourite bacterium? I don't know.
I'm wondering here, because you're using the phrase smart and friendly bacteria, so surely there are ones that are really useful to us. Can you tell us a bit more about them?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, they are really useful to us. We couldn't survive without them, so I feel a bit bad saying that they're not good enough. But the problem is they're not good enough. Because... Sometimes, so let's say, for example, you have a bacterium that lives on your skin. It's called Staphylococcus epidermidis. And it's great because it stops us getting diseases. It tells our immune system what to do. But if you have a cannula in your hand or if you have an implanted medical device, it goes, all right, this is amazing. We'll bind to that, and they grow and they grow and they grow and they cause horrible diseases. So I'd like them to be a little bit smarter. I want them to actually be friendly. I want them to say, no, that's not a great thing to do. I want them to be aware of us, and I want them to actively go out of their way to help us.
Have we got any mechanism, actually? Like, how would it be possible? Because I know we've got genetic engineering and things nowadays, and we're good at genetically modifying bacteria. How could we make a smart bacteria, a friendly bacteria?
Well, it's difficult. I don't think... I think it'd be very hard to actually create a whole microbiome. So the microbiome is the entirety of the bacteria that live on and in your body. Mm. It would be very difficult to make a model smart microbiome because all our microbiomes are very different. So us four on the panel have very different microbiomes. In fact, some people think that you can identify somebody by the bacteria that they leave behind. So it'd be very difficult to... model a particular smart microbiome. So I think you'd probably have to rely on those bacteria mutating and evolving themselves, which is possible because bacteria have a generation time of down to an hour, which is much better than we do. Our generation time's 20, 30 odd years. So you can hope, can't you?
No, it's a fantastic idea because I know there's lots of creatures which do evolve and change in relation to humans. So a lot of diseases that we had millions of years ago or thousands of years ago even are evolving to become less virulent because a disease does not want to kill you. If it kills you, it loses its host.
That's right.
So we've got all sorts of things. Like, am I right in thinking that sort of mumps and measles and all the diseases that you get as a child were way, way worse hundreds and hundreds of years ago and they have adapted to us?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So they're getting smart
because
enough
we've evolved with them. Yes, we've evolved together. So our bacteria change, and then we change in response, and then they change in response. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have turned out anything like the way we have.
Wow. So what do you think, Elf? Is this on the short list?
I'm wondering. So if it becomes friendlier,
You just, yeah, like proper friendly.
You like really? Does not that change Facebook the way friendly. We all behave, yeah, as like human beings? Because really. It's part of your DNA. It's not part of your DNA. Does that change the way our personalities evolve? Because, does friendliness equal efficiency? Like, what do you mean? Like, very confident bacteria? I don't understand. How would this change the human being and its behaviour? Like, also, would we all end up smelling the same? Like, our behaviours, our bacteria is what attracts us to other people, isn't it? Like, we go for people with contrasting immune systems. So if you have our bacteria is all friendly and purposely really good, surely it would affect us. Correct me if my science is wrong.
No, although I admit, I've never looked at a girl and thought, oh, the bacteria on her. That's a new one for me. But I can see what you mean. The point that you've really raised there, though, is that it can change our behaviour, can't it? And there's some parasites and bacteria. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so there's been experiments done where they've... it's a bit cruel, actually. They've subjected pregnant mice to stress. Oh. And then they found that the... They found that the microbiota, the bacteria in the gut, change depending on that stress. Because the brain communicates with the gut, and then that changes the composition of the bacteria in the gut. Mm-hmm. And then they found that the offspring of these mice were a lot more timid, were more prone to anxiety. But then if you take the bacteria from these mothers and give it to an offspring that wasn't hers, they actually switch to becoming anxious and timid. So the thing that they've got out of that actually is that your gut, the bacteria in your gut, can actually affect your brain. And they've found that it has quite a lot of links with depression and anxiety in humans.
So what do you think? Surely it'd be nicer if they were smarter than making us feel a bit happier, if nothing else.
Sounds a bit flowers for Algernon. I just feel like it could end up being quite... Let's put it on the short list. Shoot it down just yet.
I'm still
yet.
Stuck on scientists dressing mice.
I just
got them all with face painting to look like Garfield. I'm just going.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're already enclosed.
How do you stress a mouse?
Oh. I didn't
tell
ask.
Them their partner doesn't love them?
Yeah, would you just put them in a really complicated maze? I just assume it always has to do with... In every science film, there's always a mouse in a maze. Yeah. Why?
Tell them they might not get promoted this year.
I just think there are more interesting things for mice to do.
They could have their own wheel, at least. So, okay, surely you can do this, Stephen. You can beat that. Your suggestion, what is it?
My suggestion, if it were possible, would be to make human beings all the same size.
No.
Yeah, seriously.
Straight to
smart
no.
bacteria.
Oh, I've lost this already, haven't I? With the judges saying
it would
no.
make netball teams so boring if everyone was the same height as the goalkeeper.
Brilliant. It would be so useful if we were all the same size. No. Because there would be no... clothes shopping would be brilliant.
No, it wouldn't.
You'd have the same size feet and the same size arms, the same length of arms, the same length of legs. I mean, you still have... difference in your facial features and the colour of your skin and your hairstyles and that sort of thing,
But it would just mean it would be so much easier to get things done in life. I mean, all your technology would fit everyone. Your vehicles would fit everyone. All the doors would be the same size. And if we really, really did this properly, we'd make sure that the various measurements of the human body matched up to real-life measurements. So your foot would actually be a foot long. Or, you know, you would actually be 5 feet tall or 2 meters tall if you wanted to go metric.
Why did you go straight to imperial?
Well, I'm still quite an advocate for imperial because imperial evolved alongside us and it's all based on things we can see because most men, the average man, has a size 9 foot and a size 9 foot shoe is almost exactly a foot long. So, you know, the measurement came from people putting their boot down and saying, that's a foot. That's a practical measurement. I can visualise that. I can visualise a metre very easily, or a third of a metre. It's probably an age thing, but I find it quite difficult. But
I like the risk of different heights. I like it all. I like going to a house and not quite knowing if the door frame's going to hit my head or not. It makes me live on the edge.
See, I thought that would be a disadvantage, because I do work with occasionally some quite tall people, and they hate the fact that they have to cram into little seats on aircraft or, you know, or try and get into tiny seats at cinemas and things. And similarly, I work with quite a few quite short people who, I mean, I said earlier, I work on QI. We've just swapped this year from having Stephen Fry as host, who's 6'5" to Sandy Toksvig, who's 5 foot tall. She's still sitting in the same chair, but we've had to put it on a platform. You know, things do change. And I think if we were all the same size, life would be so much easier. I mean, it works in the animal kingdom. You know, there's not a lot of variance between herring, is there? You know, there's not a lot of variance. I mean, if you think about even the higher life forms, you know, most lions are about the same size. Most elephants are about the same size. Why do we have to have this massive variance in humans?
I must say, I do remember when I was 14 and a half and I met my first boyfriend of the time on a trampoline. Never meet a boyfriend on a trampoline. We were face to face. I was like, wow, he's the man of my dreams. And then I stood up and I realised why his nickname was Smurf, because we were from completely different heights.
And he was blue. But that's besides the point. Look, I've got to ask you a question here, because there's two things I can think of, and these are two questions I'm going to take on board. So first of all, we kind of vary in size because of age. So does that mean women are going to have to give birth to fully formed adults? And secondly, or is there a way around this problem? Do we age in a standard format as well? And if there's going to be a uniform size, what is that size? What is the perfect human?
Well, you see, that in itself is a difficult thing to work out because we can't even get that right now. There is this thing called the jaggedness principle. Have you heard of this? The jaggedness principle is the fact that there is no such thing as an average human being. I've got a couple of great examples here. In the 1940s, the US Air Force wanted to refit all their fighter planes with standardized cockpits. So what they did was they got all of their pilots, it was 4,063 pilots, and they took 10 different body measurements from all the pilots so they could work out the average size pilot, made the cockpits that size, not one pilot fitted it. That's the jaggedness principle. Another great example is in 2011, the Australian Bureau of Statistics used the National Census to find the average Australian. I can tell you who the average Australian is. She's 37 years old. She has a son and a daughter aged 6 and 9. She's 5 feet 4 or 162 centimetres tall. She weighs 71.1 kilograms or 11 stones. She lives in a three-bedroom house, has about $2,000 still to pay on her mortgage, and a family probably came from the UK. Okay, that's the average Australian from the census data. When they used the same data to try and find that person, there wasn't one person in the whole of Australia who fitted the bill.
Did that include Aborigines, or did they overlook them?
I think they actually looked at everyone. They looked at everyone in Australia, everyone who was on the census. Double checking. So you know, regardless of racial background.
Surely it's a slippery slope, though.
Because
we're not talking eugenics,
isn't it?
Well, not really.
First height, and then what, gender and race?
Depending on race as well, like everything. No, you've got to have everyone being different.
It'd be nicer to be able to choose your height.
So if you can go gadget legs.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I've got quite long legs. Well, not massively long legs. But when I get on a long flight, it's a bit horrible because I can't stretch out my legs. So it'd be nice to just go, you know, to be
but
able to
But wouldn't it be nice if you were on
go,
that
well,
plane?
Just be a bit small, have all the leg room I like, and then grow again once I
I'd love
go.
To be 6'7". Oh, that would be the dream.
But
why?
That might be what we should all be.
I was 6 foot from the age of 10, and I remember waiting for my growth spurt and then realising it had already happened.
But what shelf can you not defeat?
I can defeat every shelf.
But then there's so many things built into society all about tall being good. You know, we talk about looking down on people. And there is some evidence to suggest that people who are taller do better in business and are more successful. Surely if we could get everyone the same height, and imagine going to a cocktail party and everyone's at the same height, everyone's at the same eye
it
level.
It depends on gender, though. I remember always, well, I still get it now, always, especially from... People come up to me and go, it must be such a shame you can't wear heels. Like, what do you mean I can't wear heels? I wear heels all the time. Just because I'm 6 foot tall means I'm just committed to only wearing trainers. So I always wear heels now just to be purposely like the BFG, but sassier.
Also, how would it work when you go through puberty? So would it be like the film Big, where you go to sleep and you're...
I think you wake up
Tom Hanks, or
you'd have to have sort of stages, you know, that by the age of 10 you'd be a certain height and a certain size and a certain weight, and then by the time you reach 15 it was the same, you know. Everyone's
buying
nice
kids'
and uniform.
Clothes, though, right?
Like, oh, parents, wouldn't it be great for buying kids' clothes and handing down uniforms and things like that? See, there's so many advantages.
There may be another one here, because I think the thing you're missing here on the uniformity is that this is something that scientists and artists have been trying to understand for millennia. So Leonardo da Vinci was the guy who drew the Vitruvian Man, and it wasn't the first Vitruvian Man. It was trying to understand the proportions of life. So actually, maybe even the proportionality is useful. I know there's a really good test you can do where if you get a pair of trousers and you're not sure if they will fit you, mm-hmm. if you tie them around your neck in the right way, that's roughly the same length of your legs.
Yeah.
So the proportionality of life might be good.
It's like when you do drawing and you work out exactly where everything is with your face.
Yeah.
So you use the measurement of your eye to work out where your mouth is. So when you're drawing and when artists do that to work out...
You don't
out
know where your mouth is.
You know what I mean? When you draw it, I'm not sure...
I knew we couldn't find the G-spot, but the mouth is a whole different reason.
Well, it's another great one, isn't it? The fact that from the wrist bone to your elbow is exactly the same length as your foot.
And this, when you raise out all your arms, that's how tall you are.
Is that true, or is that just from another film?
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. If you were to measure from your wrist bone,
you've been watching
90s, to your elbow,
80s films,
you check it against your foot. It's true.
The idea of us all being the same size, although it makes sense for practical reasons, I think it annoys me because in the idea, you know, those books on what's beauty, and beauty is always linked to symmetry, and that idea that everything must be identical in order for it to be perfect. I think it takes away all uniqueness and the variety of different shapes and sizes. And also, it's nice when you meet someone who's really tall or really small,
and
you just
create
something really exciting.
And it takes away prejudice and jealousy as well.
No, but we shouldn't have those in the first place.
The reasoning of we have to all be the same to stop being jealous. They're on a slippery slope there.
We could still be different facially. We could still have different hairstyles. We could still tattoo our bodies and that sort of thing. Just in terms of... height, weight, and sort of diameter. Wouldn't it be useful?
No, but what if you really wanted to be big? Like, you wanted to be like a proper, like, I can't do the measure, but.
You can do the sound effects.
And you couldn't, and you were just sort of stuck being like, I don't know, what size would we see big? 12 or a 14 or a 10 or an 8? Or, you know, what if you wanted to be so big you could roll down a hill, but you couldn't?
I think I know the answer here.
Answer this, Stephen.
Technology. I would have a fat suit that I could roll down a hill in.
I got
same way you can
suit.
Get sumo suits, you know.
Well, come on then. I think we're going to have to move on here because the audience will have better suggestions. Is this on the shortlist, Elf?
It's not looking good.
Clearly
is it?
Not.
It's not
no,
good.
No.
It's not looking good.
Okay. I say no. I like this. I feel like a dictator, but a friendly one.
That's what they all say, isn't it? Thank you.
Hi, my name's John.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
You've talked about like kind of the physical side of things, but what about the mental side? What is a sociopath? And what impact do they have on society? And is there anything that we could do to kind of mitigate that impact?
Yeah.
So what is a sociopath? What impact do they have? And should we do something about it?
Well, this is fair, okay, because the question really here would be, what is the use of sociopaths? So if we're looking from an evolutionary viewpoint, which is my background, what do they do that's useful? And the thing we have to, I suppose, remember is that evolution is selfish. It does not care what we think about it. It doesn't mean we have to like it. Mm-hmm.
I think we should make them all the same size and then give them a lot of yogurt. I don't know.
You know what I'd do in it first.
Revolt. Revolution.
Actually, help us out here, guys. And so what we really need suggestions, though. Like, how do we cure them? Because the problem might well be that if everybody does end up being nice, according to game theory, you get what you call hawks and doves. And if everybody is a dove and if we're all kind, then that's actually when it really opens up the opportunities for those who are willing to cheat. So in other words, the capitalist pig dogs are actually at a bigger advantage if there's much, much less of them. Because we can, you know, we're all too nice to them. Perhaps we need to find a way of... What you need is policing. And this is where you can become very, very useful, Stephen, because you used to be a police officer.
Yeah.
Because what you need actually to do is to find punishments for the worst behaviours.
Battle Royale.
But you say that.
Or the Hunger Games.
When I was a cop, what I found is the thing that worked better than punishments for bad people was rewards for good people. It always worked better. There's a great scheme running in Scandinavia at the moment with speeding drivers, where if you go through a camera, it puts up a big sad face on the screen and says, you've been caught speeding, you've been reported to the police. But if you go through a camera and you're under the speed limit, big smiley face, thank you for being a good driver, you've been entered into the good driver lottery. And someone at the end of the week will win like 10,000 kroner just for being a good driver. And wherever they put this in place, there's been a substantial drop in the number of speeders. It's been really, really good. I like that sort of thing.
While we're on this team, actually, because you're the perfect person for asking this, because you had a very interesting unit that you worked with as a policeman. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? Because yours was preventative in trying to change
behavior. Yeah, and I did 30... I mean, obvious, isn't it? Cop to QI writer. Obvious career move. Now, I was a policeman for 30 years, and for the final 10 years of my time, I worked in a specialist unit at Scotland Yard called... Terrible name. We were called the Problem Solving Unit, but the idea was we went out and looked at problems that... basically wouldn't go away. No matter what you did, all the traditional methods didn't work. We found slightly more inventive, different, left field, or just the correct answer that no one had bothered to find because they'd never dug down and worked out what the actual cause of the problem was.
Can you give
us
an example?
Did you have segues? Sorry.
Sorry.
See, I love segues. I got riding them around Black Park, you know. Off-road, they're brilliant. Examples. Yeah. Some of the ones that obviously... a very popular one that hit the press, was using lollipops outside nightclubs to keep nightclub people quiet when they're coming out of the nightclubs, because what was happening is they were coming out, there was lots of noise, neighbours were complaining, police would turn up, things would escalate a little bit, then people would start getting a bit punchy, someone would get arrested, and it never worked. And we found that if we could actually keep the noise down in the first place, that worked tremendously, and lollipops were a great thing, because... Most of the noise complaints were women's voices, because women's voices are a higher register and they carry further, and women tend to gather in groups, you know, quite rightly, for their own safety or whatever, or to be social. So if you give them all lollipops, it's very difficult to be noisy when you've got a lollipop in your mouth. But when you gave them to the blokes, that was the most interesting result, because blokes stopped getting punchy when they got a lollipop in their mouth. It could be because they look a bit stupid. It could be because it's quite childish. It could be the sugar rush. You know, it could be all sorts of reasons. But the problems went away just for a bag of sort of like 10p lollipops. And it didn't even come out of taxpayers' money. The club actually paid for it themselves. So we did stuff like that all the time.
I love the idea of two men about to fight and then someone's like, no. And then just hands them a lollipop.
Have a chuppa chup. Yeah. But
that
it works.
Would be a fantastic advert.
It works. It really works. It's extraordinary.
Are you happy with that answer, sir? Because he's actually got some solutions. I don't know if he's genuinely saying we just have to give all human lollies.
Just give them all lollipops.
Well, I think it's a more general problem than just people coming out of nightclubs.
Yeah, it is.
Could you possibly test for it at a younger age and help people not to become so predatory?
But the thing is, if you tested someone for being a sociopath and then suddenly you were branded being a sociopath, it would cause a divide in group. Wasn't there that whole... I watched an episode of Law and Order UK once, and there was
all the facts.
all the facts. But there was something about the what's the word when you're there's something gene where someone is more when someone's more inclined to be aggressive, and they said if this can be passed on, you're more inclined, and then they started using it as a defence against. Oh, well, you are more likely to do this because you have this particular gene. I don't think it's labelling someone. There are lots of sociopaths who actually are nice people. It just affects the way you sort of behave and empathy levels. That you can't put people into groups like that. Sorry.
So I mentioned before that our bacteria can affect our mood. So it could possibly theoretically be that someone who ends up being a sociopath just has different balance of different species of bacteria probably in their gut that's affecting their brain. So you could actually be quite smart, because one of the ways that you can replace gut bacteria in patients who have, we call it dysbiosis, different wonky species compositions in their gut, is something called a fecal transplantation, right? So that's really good, because then you can combine a cure and a punishment at the same time.
There's
genuinely, this I found out recently. My friend, he's a psychiatrist in London, and someone came in with an older gentleman, and they diagnosed him with quite intense schizophrenia. And so they put him on all this medication. And he suspected that actually it wasn't schizophrenia because he was a practicing gay man and he'd been around during the HIV spread in the 80s. Anyway, what had happened was they tested his brain. He had a case of syphilis that had never been treated and it had gone on for such a long period of time. It had taken root in his brain and had actually started to alter his behaviour once they realised that they were starting able to treat him and affect him hugely. And I found that quite fascinating.
Science.
It's also what happens to the guy in Breaking Bad when he starts behaving really badly. It's part of the effects of his brain.
A lot of the sort of when we used to have the madhouses where we used to lock the people up back in the olden days, historically, loads of those were syphilis sufferers.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more than that, though, because what you're really talking about is not just curing diseases. You're talking like of something which is essential human behavior. And if you're going to try and stop most sociopathy, most psychopathy, most murder, the thing you've really got to get rid of. Is men. Because if you look at crime rates and things, aren't I right here, Stephen? Murders, most robberies, most assaults, most... And you're one of them, aren't you? You're part of the problem.
Yeah, men.
We are all part of the problem. Anyway, we need suggestions. And that wasn't one. But it was good discussion, so we like you. Give them a huge round of applause. Thank you very much. Hello, could you please tell us your name and then tell us what your suggestion for the next stage of human evolution should be?
Hi, my name is Maristella and I'm from Germany. And I'm thinking skin color or potentially hair color that reflects your mood. So, first of all, one of our biggest problems right now and ever is probably racism. So maybe that could be a potential solution. And secondly, the socializing situation, human interaction situation, is kind of going down the hill with the whole texting and Tinder and whatnot. And I feel like, see, when I like someone, I'm probably going to ignore him and pretend I don't like him for him to approach me. So this whole mind-playing thing's going on. So maybe if we have the moods of everyone sort of on display, then it would make everything, human interaction, more easy and simple.
I think I understand here, but whenever you start talking about attraction, you made it just sound like a traffic-like party. And those are the worst things in the entire world.
And what colours? How, if you fancy someone, you suddenly went bright red.
Just sit there going, like blue, a peacock.
That happens
blue,
to a lot of us anyway.
I don't know, you wouldn't be able to keep any of your secrets. The mystery of a human being is what's all going behind closed doors. I wouldn't like the idea of everybody being, like if I was doing a gig and it wasn't going very well and suddenly I went bright green, it's not going to put that much confidence in the, or if I could tell that they weren't enjoying it and they all went morose.
That's not a colour,
but we can imagine. It'd probably be grey.
There are animals that do it, though. I mean, cuttlefish do it, don't they? Yeah. Cuttlefish express their mood with sort of moving patterns of colours over their body.
Cuttlefish
and things like that.
We go when we get aroused, don't we? We go bright pink in the cheeks and stuff. Like, we show colour in certain ways. Yeah.
But it is all over. Like, you were talking there, Joe, about blushing. And blushing is a full body effect. We only tend to notice in the face because we're not naked as much. So
yeah, true.
Yeah, we all blush all over.
We blush on the inside of our stomachs.
At the Naked Cabaret, we did it last year, so all the audience are naked and all the...
You threw that in, like, explain.
So every year in Edinburgh, we do the Naked Cabaret and all the circus acts and performers and live artists, and last year I emceed, it was like 200 audience, and we all take our clothes off to the final countdown. But what was fascinating was watching the different performers. And yes, like as you tell jokes, your colour in your body changes. And also it was interesting watching the stand-ups who had completely straight faces and straight hands, but the rest of their body was quivering with nerves in certain areas that you're not used to having to hold up when you're performing. But it was interesting, bodies changing. You might not... I thought that was really fascinating.
Say, like, naked circus? That's somebody's eye out, surely. Come on.
Naked, I mean, I enjoyed it heavily because it was 15 acrobats from Germany all doing tumble turns.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Hold on, we need to give her an answer, though, Will. So you're going towards this way. Could you tell us what your name was again? I missed it.
Maristella.
Maristella. So Maristella, you're suggesting our mood changing our skin colour, maybe our hair colour, our general colour.
Yeah.
All right, what do you think then, Elf? Is this on the shortlist?
I think so. I would like everyone to still have their own skin colour, though, but maybe I quite maybe you could select it so it would be sort of like peacocking. So if you wanted somebody to know, but in a subtle way, you just went through and, like, you know, bright yellow just for a second to see if they caught it.
Bright yellow and all the same size. Then we'd look like minions.
And who wouldn't want that?
That's well, fantastic.
It's in then.
So let's keep it
on. Give her a big round of applause. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are collecting design specs for the next stage of human evolution. What's your name, sir, and what do you want?
My name's Paul, and like a lot of people, I think that humans are getting more lazy as we get more evolved. And I'm thinking, as we sit at a table and the food is down here, but our mouth is up here, wouldn't it be easier if we could just shovel the food somehow into our stomach directly?
Yeah.
And so wouldn't it be great if we could evolve some sort of mouth stage in our middle belly area here?
You totally threw that one in, so you actually want us to get more lazy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of
so we're not
the
lazy
direction
enough.
We're going.
You want us to be lazy?
Just get a higher table.
Sounds like you've described a scene from Wall-E.
Actually, the real question here, though, is because, Joe, right, because you know about bacteria and things here, know the belly button seems like an obvious intro, if you don't mind swallowing the odd bit of blue fluff. Why is it always blue? Actually, by whip, is your belly button fluff blue? Okay, any other colours? Maybe we can tell people's mood by their belly button fluff. We can incorporate these ideas. So actually, hold on. If you were to bypass the mouth, so we're not doing any chewing, that's going to be the problem here, and you're going to go straight to the stomach, surely with bacteria, that's the place to pimp this up. Go full
chiron. Yeah, that would be bacterially, that would be an absolute nightmare. So you have your stomach at a really, really low pH, and the whole point of that is to kill the bacteria that you don't want to be getting directly put into your intestines, as you suggested. So... yeah, you're kind of opening yourself up to infection a bit if you do that. But, you know, saves maybe.
Would you lose taste, though? You'd lose taste. You wouldn't get to enjoy it.
Well, it depends what kind of food you're eating, I suppose.
I just imagine some sort of, like, pill, a post box, like you just slot the food in. But I'm not very good at design.
Your stomach's a little bit higher, though. It's actually up here, isn't it? Your stomach's actually up here. So you just need a slightly higher table and a big hole.
We are really running out of time.
Or a big straw.
So we're going to have to cut this short. Is that on the shortlist, Elf?
Yes, I heard a cheer.
Okay. In that case, you've got a couple to choose from. There's only three have made it through. So, would you like to go for Joe's idea of smart, friendly bacteria that are actually friendly? Uh-huh. Like yogurt turned up to not be yogurty, but just good for you. Would you like Maristella's idea of colour-changing skin to dictate our mood or downstream mood, or Paul's suggestion of having a stomach mouth? She will not be swayed. She's taller than all of you.
I will be swayed.
But if everyone was the same size, she wouldn't be. Not
you're
bitter.
You're gone. Come on, Elf. What do you think?
Goodness gracious.
It's a lot of responsibility representing all of mankind, isn't it?
I don't like the idea of... Would that mean you'd lose your mouth here and you'd just have a mouth here? And it would be like Seymour from the Little Shop of Horrors going...
A whole other orifice.
Pardon?
A whole other orifice.
A whole other orifice. And who doesn't love orifices? Am I right? Another place to spread bacteria.
Yeah, we wouldn't be able to be trusted with another orifice, surely.
Okay. I mean, another orifice, that's always a winner.
it sounds like the name of...
Just for me, by that sound reaction.
So, colour change, there's only a three. So what do you
want? I like the idea of colour your mood showing on your face, but with the idea that we still keep our race, but we just get to be a bit more colourful, because I like that.
Please give her a huge round of applause, then. Thank you very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take that idea and plummet straight into our anatomy using real plumbing. Don't ask where the pipe goes. Before we go off, though, I'd love you to give a huge round of applause to our wonderful guests. We've had Joe Latimer, we've had Steve Colgan, we've had Elf Lyons. I've been your host, Simon Watt. This has been Level Up Human. Thank you and good night.
That was Level Up Human, hosted by Simon Watt, produced by Rachel Wheely, and supported by the Wellcome Trust. For more information, go to leveluphuman.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.